There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad to have you here. And this hour, live local talk, phone number 343-0106, also works for the text line. And as I said, legislature back at it tomorrow after their spring break. Got to have in the middle of an exhausting legislative session, and to talk more about one of the bills that has all of us talking here, and that is the lotto bill from Senator McClendon. Bill Britt from the Alabama Political Reporter joins us. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being here. And your headline, understanding an important section in the lottery CA, which is constitutional amendment, one some don't want you to understand. What don't they want me to understand, Bill?
Well, there's been a lot of fodder out there trying to confuse people on what is a video lottery terminal, why can only the four tracks in Alabama have the first licenses or licenses, and what that means as far as, and the other thing is, what we mean when we talk about a clean bill.
Yeah.
You know, so clean bill is confusing to people. The video terminal lottery machines, there's been some confusion on what they actually are, and there's been confusion on why these four locations are the first and perhaps only to be allowed to operate.
All right, and this, I guess we do need to go back and do some story building here, history building, that The Poarch Creek, the Indian facilities and others, but the Poarch Creek's working off of an idea. The reason there's video bingo is that bingo is legal in the state of Alabama. Is that fair enough to say? Is that like, I know it's overly simplified, but...
Yeah, it's overly simplified, but in essence, at one point, there was no problem with video bingo in Alabama. The Indians opened their casinos, and because they are a sovereign nation... within the state, we have no authority to go in and tell them what they can and cannot do within limits. You know, they're regulated by federal statute, not state.
So now, if Alabama has a... Some people said that they could have gone ahead already and had video lottery or whatever, the digital lottery, whatever the semantics is on it, but if the state of Alabama passes a lotto, a CA here, then they would be further green-lighted to have this digital lottery?
Sure. They can play anything that's available in the state.
Okay.
You know, any games, chants that are lawful in the state, they can play them as well.
Okay, and so we got, so there's the base we're working off of. You said in your right up here over at alabamareporter.com that McClendon's legislation is a clean bill because it only covers one subject, a lottery. So that makes
right.
It clean?
And what a clean bill by definition means is that it only covers one subject. When we've had lottery bills in the past, they've covered multiple subjects. The one that we saw in 2015 not only established the lottery, it allowed table gaming, it allowed, you know, bingo, craps, all kinds of, you know, everything under the sun.
Okay.
One of the bills is only about one thing, lottery. That's it.
Okay. And
so
there's no...
Is. It only has one subject.
There's no rider on it. There's no, like, to build some building in Huntsville tack to it or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
There's nothing... extraneous.
Okay.
And that's why the importance of the lottery video terminals at four tracks in Alabama. Because, see, those tracks, like the Mobile track, was approved for gambling, betting on dogs and horses and that type of thing, paramutual waging, back in the 70s. So the people of Mobile decided back in the 70s that they wanted gaming at those facilities, that they allowed it in that facility there in Mobile. Same thing in Macon, in Greene, which came on in the 80s, and Jefferson County as well. So it's Jefferson, Macon, Greene, Mobile.
Okay.
Those counties all decided on this years ago.
You point out that, you said it again, and you point this out in your piece over at ALReporter.com about paramutual. I think it's worth saying, because a lot of this is not, you know, kitchen table discussion. We don't. You say paramutual, right, wagering. Define that for us. What is paramutual waging?
According to the gaming experts, paramutual wage is basically a pool bet. In other words, we all bet on a horse to win, or several horses to win. Now, that pool, whoever wins in that pool, say your horse comes in first, well, you get the money out of that pool for that horse winning. Now, if I bet in that pool on a horse that doesn't win, then I don't get anything. But if I also, if I bet on the same horse you do, and you win, I win. And so the lottery works the same way. We all buy into the lottery in whatever way we buy in. And so we're betting on some numbers to come up our way. We're betting on a ticket to have some numbers that are favorable to us, and we win. And so everybody that hits on a number gets money out of that pool. So everybody puts money in, and anyone who wins gets some money out.
Okay.
That's how simple paramutual betting is. It's not like you go to a bookie and the bookie gives you odds. You know, it's not. You're not betting on odds. You're betting on your money with everybody else's money and somebody to win.
Of course, you've known me long enough to know that I just, you know, roll my eyes and say either you gamble or you don't. But that's a whole. Our state's not bringing that up. So we're talking about the wine spritzer, the gambling world, and lotto here. Okay, so the state lottery to be played at these locations, because the counties each passed constitutional amendment years ago allowing gambling at the four sites. So what's the beef here from the Porch Creeks on this?
Well, see, right now the Porch Creek are the only ones that are operating video lottery terminal, not video bingo terminals, that are not being molested by the state. In other words, we're leaving them alone. So they have three sites, Wetumpka, Montgomery, and Atmore. And those sites, they're bringing in billions of dollars, and they basically have a monopoly on that type of gaming in the state. And see, if you give Jefferson, Macon, Greene counties an opening, they all of a sudden have competition for that money. You know, let's look at it really realistically. How many people are going to drive from Birmingham to Atmore if they can do the same thing and more in Birmingham?
Right? Mm-hmm.
They're not going to leave there. Same thing, people coming down that corridor are going to stop off at Victory Land in Macon County rather than continuing on down to Atmore. So they have more competition. They don't like competition. Who does? I don't want competition in the news business.
Right.
I've got it. I deal with it by producing a superior product for people to deal with, to look at. And the same thing there. The thing is, they finally the competition, and that's what they don't want. They would like just a lottery that's on paper. So if you have a paper lottery, then all of a sudden they can offer any type of game they want. They can offer cards, they can offer roulette, they can offer blackjack, because and it's complicated, but a paper lottery opens up class 3 gaming.
Okay, yeah, because I heard that the other day. I heard that the other day. Let's. Can you hang on a second? We run the news break and come back? Because that was the thing that I heard the other day, Bill, that had me. So if we get a paper lottery, that's class 3 gaming. It seems like my whole mentality for all this time has been lotteries, this different kind of wine spritzer, the gambling world, but maybe not. We'll talk more about this when we come back with Bill Britt from the Alabama Political Reporter right here on Midday Mobile.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. I'm glad you're here. Good to talk to our buddy Bill Britt with the Alabama Political Reporter. And I hate to make this like school, but I think for a lot of us, Bill, it needs to be like school because there's a lot of moving parts here that seem confusing here. So can you be back up and kind of run us through, give us, if we hit the Wikipedia page on the Alabama Lotto, what will we see in paragraphs 1 through 3?
Okay. First off, what McClendon's bill does is allow the people to vote to approve a lottery, if they, yes or no. That's the first thing it does. It allows people to approve a lottery because, and I'll make that's what it does.
Okay.
Now, inside that approval, it allows for the state to set up a gaming commission. It, you know, to oversee all this. It allows for a trust fund to be set up. That's where all the money goes. We'll know where the money goes, and then that money is split between education and the general trust fund budgets. So it's 50-50 split. Now, it also authorizes certain lottery games, Mega Millions, you know, the games that states play all over the country.
Okay, right? that was another those question. We'd be part of those things?
Yes, we would be part of all those big games. So you can buy a ticket and be a part of those big games. It also establishes an Alabama lottery. And the Alabama Lottery is one that is state-only lottery. And, you know, so you can buy your scratch-offs. You can go in and go to a kiosk and buy a ticket for that lottery. All of those things you can do. It also allows for you to play the lottery on your iPhone or your smartphone, which is a growth industry, you know, where you have to verify all these things about yourself, your age and blah blah blah, checks all that out, and you can actually play the lottery from your phone. That's a huge growth industry, especially among millennials. Then the other thing that it does is it allows for video lottery terminals, which are these fancy machines that do nothing more than select a card that's been issued by the state electronically. It blows some horns and whistles, and it electronically scratches that off and tells you if you won. And that's simple enough. Now, the reason those video terminal lotteries are allowed at the four tracks, Macon, Greene, Jefferson, Mobile, is because they already have a constitutional amendment that allows gambling at those tracks. And the type of gambling allows paramutual gambling. And that means pool betting. Everybody's betting on winning something. And that is already legal there. And a lottery is basically nothing more than a paramutual bet. In other words, everybody's putting into the pool, and everybody wins a piece of it if they hit the winning number. So that's kind of the long and the short of it, more the short. Allows for a lottery, allows for what games can be played, sets up a commission, says where the money's going, and who can touch the money. Real strict on who can touch the money. Education gets half, and the general fund gets half. It's basically that's it. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to it.
Right, and you also break down. Yeah, I was going to say, you also break down, you know, that the tracks would, they have $100,000 for a 10-year license and paying between 24 to 25% in taxes.
I mean, if you look at it, the Indians operate for casinos in the state, pay no taxes, none whatsoever. Even if the Indians were granted a contact with the state and given all this stuff that the other tracks have, they would only pay between 5 and 10%, where the privately owned tracks would pay between 24 and 25%. So let's break that down like real simple. Over the past 8 years, Quartz Creek have invested around $2 billion, that's with a B, dollars, in entertainment and gaming facilities throughout the state and country. All that was paid for by money that was earned in Alabama, but they paid no taxes on it. If that $2 billion had been taxed by the state, you would be talking about some $600 to $700 million would have gone to the states, gone to the state in taxes if they had been a private entity. So you're missing out on a lot of money. And there's already gambling here. People say they don't want gambling. There's already gambling. And if you want gambling, you ought to want the people that are making the most money paying the most taxes. That's Bill Britt's argument.
Okay, good. And this is, while a funny text, a good one here, too. Hey, Sean asked Bill what he thinks the odds are of McClendon's bill passing.
Well, I thought the odds were simple. When the bill was first introduced, has it been widely vetted? I mean, everybody had seen the bill, understood what it was, and it all looked good until the Porch Creek started getting involved in it, and State Senator Dale Marsh, who's the president of the Senate, he has started throwing roadblocks down because he wants to run for U.S. Senate and he wants the Porch Creek's money. And so they're going to reward whoever stops that bill mightily. And really, my thing is, look, we can't go down there and tell the Porch Creek what to do on their land with their gaming. I think they shouldn't come up here to Montgomery and tell us what we can do. I just, you know, it just kind of irritates me. We can't go down there and tell them diddly squat, but they want to come up here and tell us, the Alabama legislature, how we can offer a lottery to the people. It's none of their business. That's me.
It's interesting, you know, with, you know, whatever the further aspirations are for Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh, that he has, I mean, if you're, you say, okay, in the old idea of fighting the lottery or something like that would be something that would be a positive for Republicans in the state. But this is, I mean, McClendon's a Republican. There's Republicans all over this bill.
Yeah. Well, and Republicans back it. I mean, the most conservative county that I can think of right now, when polled, 78% of Republicans won a lottery. 78%. That's pretty much statewide. So, listen, our president owned casinos. Our president complained vigorously about how unfair it was to private business that had to compete with tribal business. And if you're a Donald Trump supporter, then you ought to be supporting his ideas about how we run our gaming industry, because he was spot on. It shouldn't be harder for non-Native Americans to operate a casino. And it shouldn't be that all the advantages are given to one person, one group, and not the other. Porch Creek has about 3,000, a little more than 3,000 people in the tribe. $2 billion divided by 3,000 people or so, that's about $60 million a person, man, woman, and child. There is no community in Alabama where 3,000 people live together and they all have $60 million in the bank. Just think about that for a second. That's pretty good, baby.
Yeah, it's then, but obviously the money is not in their hands because, I mean, you know, there's not a bunch of 60 millionaires packed in up there. So
No. No, the money is in the tribe's hands, but the only people that live high on the hog are the tribal council members. The folks that live there and the actual money is supposed to benefit get about $2,500 a week. It's a nice benefit and, you know, a nice place to, you know, a nice college degree and all that stuff. But come on, man, they just paid $1.53 billion for a casino in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, not Bethlehem, Alabama. And again, I don't mind the Porch Creek making money, but they shouldn't be making all the money. You know, The people of Alabama deserve some of that money. If we're going to house gaming in this state, we ought to get paid. And the state's not getting paid. And my big argument is, look, over the last election cycle, 2014, Porch Creek Indians gave $1.4 million to mostly Republican lawmakers.
Because those were the ones who were going to win.
10 years from now.
I don't know.
Yeah,
they're going to pick a winning horse.
when they own the senator from Alabama and they own the Congress from Alabama, we might as well just give the state back and just label it Quartz Creek territory like it was at one time.
There you go. I'm sure this is a subject you've talked about a bunch and we'll talk about on the next edition of The V. Here, talk to people about the Voice of Alabama Politics and where they can catch the TV show.
Yeah, every Sunday we have a television show that breaks down all my nonsense in 27 minutes, plus some smart people who know what they're talking about. And you can watch it in the Mobile Baldwin County area and on Fox 10 down there. It comes on at 9. Or if you miss it there, you can go to our website, alreporter.com. Scroll down and click on it there. You can watch it any day of the week. Again, Sean, thanks for having me on. And if I'm so passionate, it's because I want the people of Alabama to get the money off this. I really do. Our education system, our general fund needs the money.
There you go.
That's the whole idea.
Montgomery always needs the money, that's for sure. Bill, as always, thank you, man. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, 1:30. Go to the news, and then we're coming right back. Talk to you at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Busy trying to get a meteor gift, gift here to put online on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. 136, and a big thank you to Bill Britt from the Alabama Political Reporter. You know, it's interesting, this the way we have chopped this up and the layer. You know how many times we talk about the layers of old paint here in Alabama, the laws and the politics of Alabama. I would like have no chance. I'm not naive enough to believe that I could lead some movement to undo it. But I would like to take the Etch-a-Sketch. Remember our old the Etch-a-Sketch? The Etch-a-Sketch screen has got circles upon lines and this and that when it comes to what is gambling, not is what's not gambling in the state. I mean, how many attorney generals we go through and different opinions of we're seizing the lotto machines, and then our former Governor Bentley said, I'm going to leave it up to local sheriffs, and I'm going to take the Etch-a-Sketch and shake it and start with that that clean gray screen and redraw this. But realize it can't happen. But it's... You know, you talk about, it's parimutuel betting, so parimutuel betting is okay. What about just a couple of things I've brought up in the past? Number one, if we want it to be lottery and nobody wants the dice or the cards or all the other games here, the sports gambling that's going on in Mississippi, if they don't want that, then what about on lottery we just legalize lotteries, plural? How could that be? How about the constitutional amendment, the change to the Constitution of Alabama of 1901, would be changed to say lotteries are legal. Private entities that want to risk capital, they can bond for an amount, whatever that would be to pay out. You know, they bond out, they can, they're a $100 million lottery, they're a $50 million lottery, they're a $600, whatever it is. They pull their resources together and say, through this bonding, they can... They're backed up. They have the insurance. They have the coverage to be able to pay out a lottery winnings of X. Okay. They do that, go to the state. They have that documentation. State says, okay, you've got the documentation. Now you pay whatever it is. It's $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 a year. I don't know what the market will bear to run a lottery in the state. Okay. Private entities said, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you pay some percentage of the net back to the state. So if the state is all into the lotto thing to bring revenue in for the general fund and the ETF, couldn't you bring that revenue in? And I know some of you will say, yeah, we're just giving Montgomery more money to make more. I get that. But let's say you're on the front that you're gonna get this revenue to Montgomery. It's going to go to the general fund. It's going to go to the ETF. Is the better mechanism, and this is not rhetorical, this is a question I think it's worth debating, is the better mechanism to have the state in the lotto business? Okay? State running the state lottery and then taking the revenue in, you know, whatever's left after they pay out the winnings. Or is it better to have checks come into the treasury from private lotteries running in the state? the state then wouldn't have, we wouldn't have a department of the lottery. There wouldn't be a lottery bureau. There might be some auditors, right? Yeah, you have maybe two auditors in the state, one or two auditors in a department, that their job is to look at the books of these lotteries, make sure that everything's on the up and up and they're not hiding, you know, revenue from the state. And they go check, like a gaming commission is in other states. So they would go and look. And then the state would get checks for the money without running the lottery. It would be like somebody running any other business, except this one would be piled high like a sin tax, right? Taxes are high. I mean, heck, the state's in the business of booze. Could the state, even though we're in the business of running retail booze outlets here with ABC, couldn't the state make a lot of revenue just doing what they're doing and charging the excise tax to the booze coming in? Let private entities, you know, only run liquor stores in the state? And then you take the revenue from the excise tax. What about that? Why is that not a popular idea? I would suggest it's probably because there's no power in it for anybody in Montgomery. But, and I'm not saying that there are people that are going, oh, ho, I will control the whole state if I could only get this lottery. I don't think that, but I think people go, oh, well, we can't let private entities, private business run these things. Why not? If you notice this, I mean, around the country, states run lotteries. Private entities run Class 3 gaming. Which one is the, would you get addicted to faster? You know, or could lose money faster. I don't know if you have anybody on Skid Row, because I do believe that people will spend money on lottery that should be spent elsewhere. I agree. I'm a person that's completely open to the idea of any kind of gambling having societal ills. There is. If you don't believe there are any societal ills from gambling, you're not looking around. There are. But in the scope, of possible addiction or getting, you know, losing the rent money to gambling, I think lottery is the furthest down on the list. But that's the one states want to run. If it needs the oversight, why wouldn't states run Class 3 gaming and lead private entities to the lottery? Just some questions. All right. The Joe Reed letter. This is going to come up, and hopefully we'll get Senator Doug Jones back on the show to talk about this, because this is a story we've been talking about off and on for a year or so. And Republicans in Alabama should be so happy, because the Alabama Democrat Party infighting keeps them hamstrung beyond just the attitudes of Alabamians, right, and going for a conservative agenda in Montgomery. The Democrat Party in Alabama is a train wreck. It's a dumpster fire. Story from our buddy Jeff Poor from over at Yellowhammer. Alabama Democrat Party's Joe Reed attacks Doug Jones and blames white people leaving party for Alabama Dems problem in a letter. According to a letter obtained by Yellowhammer News, the Alabama Democratic Conference Chairman Joe Reed attacked Senator Doug Jones and blamed him for the Democrat National Committee's call for the Alabama Democratic Party to hold new elections for chairman and vice chairman. Details of the letter, dated March 22nd, and addressed to, quote, the prevailing ethnic minority members of the state Democrat Executive Committee, end quote. You see what I'm talking about, y'all? First surfaced in the Montgomery Advertiser story late last week, Reed called on members of the ADC to unite on May 4th, 2019, the tentative date for elections, to re-elect current Chairwoman Nancy Worley and Vice Chairman Randy Kelly. However, the letter also blames white people for the Alabama Democrat Party's shortcomings. After offering details of the call for new elections, Reed accused Jones of persuading the Democrat National Committee Chairman Tom Perez of giving Jones another chance of gaining control of the Alabama Democrat Party. Reed dismisses the candidacy of former Senator Myron Penn and accuses opponents of the status quo of being dissatisfied over Worley and Kelly requiring county parties to, quote, have regular meetings and have a full slate of officers make financial reports, recruit Democrats to run for office, and treat black Democrats fairly, end quote. The ADC does not address the current problems of the Alabama Democratic Party, which he assigns the blame to, in part, to white people leaving the party. Okay. You know, Joe Reed, who has said many times that there's a black Democrat party and a white Democrat party in Alabama. Joe Reed, do you think that may be the problem? You think that may be the problem, saying there are two different Democrat parties? Isn't the job in politics to get like big tents and bring people together and try to get groups to not Joe Reed. He says, he writes in this letter, white people left the Democratic Party, not blacks. When Obama won in 2008, the next general election in Alabama was 2010, when the Republicans defeated enough Democrats to become the majority in the legislature for the first time in the history of Alabama. Nancy Worley was not the chair. Mark Kennedy was the chair, but Mark cannot be blamed for that. White people have been leaving the Democratic Party in Alabama since 1948, and in 2018, only two white Democrats were elected to the legislature, one in the House and one in the Senate, end quote. Also in the letter, Reed reminds recipients that they are expected to purchase tables for a luncheon at the ADC's annual conference later this month, with those expectations set by the size of county and the price ranging from $50 to $500. In other words, pay up. I'm going to put this story out on Twitter. It's like Joe Reed does not see, it's like he's blind to what he's doing, which is good news for Republicans in Alabama. Joe Reed is like doing good for Republicans in Alabama, but it is, okay, it's white people's fault that there's problems with it. Maybe it's the messaging, Joe Reed. Maybe it's where the state has gone. And saying, what he's doing in so many words is saying, oh, well, when Barack Obama was elected, then white people left the Democrat Party in Alabama. You want to look at the history of the switch to Republicans in the state of Alabama? It has nothing to do with Barack Obama. Nothing to do with the former president. It's ridiculousness from Joe Reed. And hopefully we'll have Senator Doug Jones, who was called out specifically by Joe Reed, to talk about this more in the future. All right, 146, coming right back. We'll check in with the news here from News 5 and come back and wrap it up on a Monday.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 152 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. By the way, coverage of Auburn in the Final Four. First time I've ever said that. Saturday, 5 o'clock right here on FM Talk 106.5. Right, getting a lot of questions here about the Roll Tide War Eagle Reinvestment Act from people on Twitter and on the text line. Before I get into that and answer more, I want to read you a story here. This story from our buddy Todd Stacey over at the Alabama Daily News. His number one story for this day, April 1st, 2019. Shelby announces plan to relocate the nation's capital to Huntsville. Top story up from Alabama Daily News. U.S. Senator Richard Shelby today announced plans to finally relocate the rest of the federal government's operations from Washington, D.C. to Huntsville, completing a decades-long goal of making for Alabama's senior senator. For years on the Appropriations Committee, Shelby has steered billions of dollars to build up aerospace, missile defense, space, homeland security, and FBI programs to Huntsville. Taking the next step to relocate the rest of the government to North Alabama just felt right, Shelby said. He said, I feel like it's time. Huntsville has a lot to offer, and people have been tired of the swamp for a while. Am I right? Sources on the Appropriations Committee told the Alabama Daily News that the work of relocating all of government from Washington to North Alabama could take years, but Shelby had been has the backing of President Trump on this one. He says, I think we'll start with the Pentagon. That's easier than it might seem, one staffer said. Capitol complex is going to be complex, though. Library of Congress, all those books. It's going to be a real bear. There's a top story on this first day of April. And with that being said, we got in a discussion starting this morning about one of these bills that might come up in session this week, the Roll Tide War Eagle Reinvestment Act, that plan to tax per TV per home, so each TV in the house between 1.5 to 3 cents per hour per set when watching Alabama or Auburn compete in football or basketball. Of course, commercial entities, sports bars and all, would pay more per hours viewed. Of course, brought up a lot of questions. What about people that consume their television over the air through a digital antenna. What about people using streaming and fire sticks and whatever those things are called as some way to bounce the signal onto their TV screen? What if you're watching out-of-state games? They say you won't pay in this, only Alabama and Auburn, which, of course, leaves out University of South Alabama and Troy and UAB and others from this possible bill that possibly was filed for session this week in regular session, the Roll Tide War Eagle Reinvestment Act. Of course, I would argue there may be some pushback if this bill was filed and calling it the War Eagle Roll Tide Reinvestment Act. It would take that money and split it between the general fund, 50%, and then the other 50% to be split between Alabama and Auburn, no other schools in the state. This bill was discussed here on this first day of April. Okay, we'll just put it that way. So those of you that want to continue to gnash teeth out there, gnash them. We can gnash them over on my Twitter feed, at FMTalk1065. And hopefully that resolves any kind of issues, any kind of things people were wondering about out there. All right. By the way, I'll put this on the Twitter feed here. Pretty good. I got to see a this is like not normally a new, it's not really a news story, but it's a tour through the governor's beach mansion. Oh yeah, that same one of Governor Bentley fame. After they said it's largely unused since the $1.8 million renovation that went on there in 2017. Gabe Tynes from Lanyap was allowed to tour the interior. He did. And Gabe, if you're listening, man, Gabe, that's like a, you did like a glossy magazine shoot for the interior. Y'all go look at this. This is pretty swank digs. It's got some pictures of like Governor Ivey's dog and some pictures, some Auburn pictures up. And so, but other than that, it looks like, you know, your standard, not standard, looks like it's for a rental property, but it's super nice looking. And it's the Governor's Beach Mansion. I think there should be a lottery. If it goes largely unused, and then maybe we'll get in a discussion of this over on the Twitter feed. If the governor is not going to be booked into the Governor's Beach Mansion that we the people have paid for here in the state of Alabama, what about a lottery? You lay out, the governor can pick what week she needs to be there or she wants to have a dignitary there. And then the other weeks, we have a state lottery and have a fee, whatever it costs for a week, it's whatever it is. And you can put in for the lottery, and if you're drawn, you get to go stay there. Now, I would argue that that fee should be reduced some because we've already, through our state taxes, paid for not only way back the governor's beach mansion, but now the $1.8 million renovation that was done. Like I said, when y'all see this story, the place is nice, real nice, that we get to stay there. What do you think? Like on the state website, you go and you put in, you know, you put in your name and all that stuff and what weeks you'd be interested in. And then the state runs like a random drawing. And if you're drawn, then you get to go stay. I can take the kids and everybody and go on down to the beach. What do you think? As a way to, you know, you get some operating money, have a reduced fee for we the people of Alabama to be able to stay at the Governor's Beach Mansion. We pay a little bit of money that helps with the upkeep. But we get a smooth deal on this because over time we've paid for it in taxes. What do you think? So we'll see if anybody will bring that up. Can we see if anybody in maybe the local delegation here will bring that up in session tomorrow in Montgomery? Like for reals, as the kids say? Like a job before that? Should we, the people, be able to like get a week-long trip to the Governor's Beach Mansion? Pretty nice place. All right, I am out of here. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Oh yeah, Terry says the heart-shaped bed and zebra wallpaper make it stand out. It does. That's the Bentley. That's the Bentley room. Now y'all go look at it. Looks whoever did the design work. It looks nice. We should be proud of it. I just want to stay at it. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. There should be just a little bit of Auburn basketball talk coming up over the next 4 hours. Y'all stay right here. Check us out online, FMTalk1065.com.